Hi, this is Tamar Yona. I'd like to remind you that Israel News Talk Radio has branched out into video programs. You're listening to an interview originally recorded on video. If you would like to hear and watch this interview, simply go to our homepage at israelnewstalkradio.com and click on the black menu bar which runs near the top of the page and click on the tab for videos. There you'll find all of our video interviews. Enjoy! You're listening to the Tamar Yona Show here at israelnewstalkradio.com. A new standard of care. Megan Smith is our guest, and she's going to be talking to us about cancer, alternative treatments, and what the medical establishment is doing with their standard procedure with cancer patients. And we're going to be delving into that on this interview. So Megan Smith, she holds an MS in biology with a thesis in molecular genetics. She currently works as a documentary filmmaker and freelance investigative journalist in the areas of science and health, concentrating on non-conventional medical therapies. And she previously lobbied Congress on energy issues. And she's come out with a documentary called A New Standard of Care, Alternative Cancer Therapies. So I want to do this interview because I don't know if a lot of you are getting this information, because unfortunately, the big search engines bury this type of thing and other places censor completely. And that is that there are many reports being denied, by the way, that cancer rates have spiked since the COVID vaccines came out. And with all of these people apparently getting cancer, they're going to need help. And do they go to the medical establishment with blind trust, or should they also complement their possible cure or therapies with alternative medicine or alternative therapies? And we're going to be talking about that on the show. So welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Tamar. Appreciate you having me on your show.
All right. So as I said, that we've seen a huge spike. Again, if you look at these truth fact checks, they'll deny it. But spikes of more than tens of thousands, over 100,000 times or percent of spikes now in cancer. And it's being talked about in the free press or the social media of people who have minds and want to ask questions and want to be educated. And so I want to ask you, with this, you made a documentary, and in your documentary, the doctors that you interviewed, I quote, said, quote, every year more people die from cancer than the year before. Now, you would think that in the year 2024, and with all the science that we have and the experience that we have, these numbers would be going down. So how do you explain that?
Well, the way conventional explains it is that we're living longer, so therefore they're finding more cancers, and plus screening, they're finding more cancers. I mean, they're really good at manipulating statistics. But the bottom line is they actually predicted before COVID hit, I noticed they predicted that the cancer was going to go up exponentially all of a sudden. And so that made me really suspicious. That was the World Health Organization who told me that. I interviewed them also. So they knew this was coming. COVID is extremely inflammatory, as are the vaccines. And any chronic disease has inflammation in it. So it only stands to reason that we have more cancer now. And no, they're not curing it at any faster rate, because they're not curing hardly any of them. Most of them are incurable.
Even with the science?
Yes, even with the evidence-based science that they claim. They've been using the same chemotherapy, radiation, surgery for 50 years, and the figures haven't changed. They just try and manipulate them so they look like they're getting better, but they're not. And the incidence is higher.
Okay. Can you talk to us a little bit about the manipulation? Because when we go to see our doctor, we want to be able to trust our doctor. And many of us do, blindly even, and are going to say it's like written in stone. The doctor says it's like God says to do this, and you're going to follow what he says and not go for these alternative quacks. So what would you say?
So my act two in my film, I go into all the details of how they're manipulating. It starts out in the med schools. They're basically, it was told to me by a doctor, they're indoctrinating the doctors to believe certain things. And the standard of care that's set by the insurance companies in the U.S., it's set by Medicare, which is the government. They're not necessarily doctors. They're not looking at the science. They're just looking at what they want to cover. And so it doesn't, it bleeds down from the insurance companies down to the med school. So they're doing it all backwards. They should be looking at the science and then telling you what they're going to cover based on, you know, what the science says. So that's all backwards. They manipulate statistics. They use, you know, things of relative versus absolute risk and all kinds of things. It goes on and on and on. And it's one of the more important parts of my film. I think it's at the end of the film.
So for the manipulation, you were mentioning how, number one, doctors are being already groomed and molded into accepting the standard procedure that the health insurances are paying for and what the medical establishment is allowing. So in that case, could one assume that even if your doctor thinks differently and thinks you should have a different type of therapy, he can't suggest it to you because it would be out of the framework of what he's allowed?
Yeah, the standard of care is a legal term. If they follow the standard of care, which they can find in different guidebooks and what their associations are telling them, et cetera, if they follow the standard of care, they can be sued, but they're probably going to win in court because they follow the standard of care, which is defined as the average that most doctors would do, a reasonable doctor. So that's what they hide behind. So they know if they step outside that box, their risk for liability is a lot higher. And their associations, they're the worst. They're telling them, I found so many myths in these association websites. I overturn them in my film one by one, but it's just what the doctors are being told. And they don't have time to go into the medical literature, which is what I did actually in my film.
What are they being told?
They're being told, you know, gosh, where do I start? that they're, you know, they'll tell you that they can cure a cancer when it's only like 5-year cure. So they manipulate that, and they won't tell this is where the doctors, I think, know that it's only a 5-year cure, but they won't tell the patient unless you ask them. They're starting to not do that as much. But when you go in to talk to a doctor, you have to do your research ahead of time. I know it's hard when you have a cancer diagnosis, but if you do the research ahead of time, like watching my film, and there's another gentleman, Ty Bollinger, who did a big series called The Truth About Cancer. And it's better to have all these questions up front and know what to ask the doctor. But I mean, and as far as like mammography radiation, they're telling us it's low dose. It's not low dose. Most of those tests are off the chart with radiation, and those can induce cancer by themselves. So I have another film called Boobs documentary, and it goes into breast cancer screening and talks about the radiation loads we're getting.
Okay. And so when you're talking about this 5-year cure, explain that to our listeners.
So you'll go into your doctor and say, okay, doc, I have throat cancer. I'm stage 2. What are my chances of living? They'll say 20%. But what they'll leave off is it's 20% living for 5 years with the cancer. And then your chance of dying is pretty great. So you only have 20% chance of living 5 years. So you have to ask them, what does that mean? You know, how many years are you talking about when you give me a percentage?
Okay. And why is it 5 years? What's the...
They do that, and they do that all the time in medicine. They'll say, you'll get going for a hip surgery and somebody will die on day 31. And if they didn't die between days 1 and 30, they're not counted as a statistic from dying from the surgery. So it's a way to cut it off. So they just say it's a 5-year cure. They just don't tell you, a lot of times they leave off the 5-year and just give you the percentage. So
and
it's just
that
a way.
Because they're testing and their data that the research is only goes up till 5 years, because after that, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Probably part of it. It was easier just to cut it off at 5 years, and that way the doctors could just leave off the 5 years. I don't think they're being told to say that, but a lot of them are doing that. I've had my friends tell me that over and over. So you have to ask questions. You have to know what how are they couching this answer? It's
In your
tricky.
documentary, the doctors that you're interviewing and the experts there, they're saying that people who go in for the accepted medical establishment therapy, that they are not being told what the side effects from some of the chemo that they're doing and the therapies that the doctors are prescribing for them, what the dangers are and how that can kill them. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's same thing. When you go in to talk to your doctor, ask them what the side effects are and really grill them on that, because they will leave off a lot of things. There's these things called secondary cancers that you get from radiation and chemotherapy, meaning, you get your treatment and then 3 years later you get bladder cancer, a whole new cancer, and there's a good chance it was caused by the chemotherapy. But they won't tell you that up front. You have to ask them, what's the chance of secondary cancers from this treatment? It goes on and on. But make sure you understand, they want to give you hope is what they hide behind. We want to give the patient hope. We didn't want to take away their hope. We didn't want to tell them how miserable they were going to be, because they would have run out the door. I think the subtext is, they don't want to give you time to think. They'll rush you into therapies, which is what they did to my husband. He wanted to go on a 2-week vacation after he had radiation and it calmed down the pain in his bones. He said, "Let me go off for 2 weeks. I'll come back and do the chemotherapy." He was stage four. And the doctor said, no, you have to go right now, right now, right now." And he never got to take his vacation. And I always felt really bad about that. And I know my husband wasn't happy. They do that all the time. And one oncologist said, "It's a competitive sport. They are going to tell you whatever they have to tell you to get you to stay in the door. Don't go looking on the internet. Don't go down to Mexico to get treatments there. They want to keep you, line you up. Chemotherapy and vaccines, that's where medicine makes its money. So they're going to do anything they can do to get you into chemo."
So why can't one's doctor just say, look, according to the health insurance and the laws and what I'm allowed to prescribe to you, this is what you're looking at. However, there are alternative therapies, and I'm not telling you to do this, but maybe you want to look into it yourself. Maybe you want to take a trip to Mexico if that helps. Again, I'm not saying that alternative medicine is the answer, because there could be a lot of quackery there also. One has to do their own research and decide what's best for themselves. But why can't they present it in that way? Why can't they say, look, I can't tell you to do this, but maybe you want to try it out? Because otherwise, it just makes all doctors, it just, I mean, to me, it sounds like there's this terrible conspiracy that all of these doctors don't care at all about their patients. And I know that most of them, I would imagine, do. But they are, as you said, constrained in what they can say and not say. But why not give another side or a hint?
I think there's a lot of reasons. Again, they've been indoctrinated to only go down this road. And if they haven't seen proof with their own eyes that some alternative somewhere works, they have to be science-based. Remember hearing that the whole time during COVID? Science-based, evidence-based. And turns out 50% of the medical literature is fraudulent, according to two of the top five medical journal editors. So, keep that in the back of your mind when they talk about evidence-based medicine. It's just, you don't know which 50% of the literature to believe. But they just go down. They also are afraid of being their colleagues about peer group pressure. I mean, they don't want to be known as the doctor who's telling their patients to go consider alternatives. It's just they're a funny bunch. And they also, part of it is they don't want to believe it. They want to believe that what they're doing, they've convinced themselves what they're doing is the right thing for their patient. Otherwise, how could they get through the day? So
Right.
an alternative to what they're doing isn't. But the ones that have broken away, good for them, because they finally went, I'm hurting my patient. Sometimes I'm killing my patient, and I got tired of it, so I left and did non-conventional. So good for them.
And you actually interviewed a couple of those doctors in this documentary that you did. So in what they refer to in the documentary as the cancer industry, they talk about commission and omission. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? What is that?
Commission is when you accidentally leave something out, and in sorry, see, I'm going to get them mixed up because that was a doctor who said that. I think it's commission is when you accidentally leave it out, and omission is when you do it on purpose. So there's two different ways, and it's that's I think he was talking about the 5-year survival rate. You can say again, you have 20% of 20% chance of living. And then they leave off 4 or 5 years. So that's what he was talking about there. And it's just another way to manipulate statistics, which is what they're really good at. I get more
I'm
into
just
that.
curious, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if someone had cancer and their doctor's telling them you need to go this route, there's this 5-year period, as you're talking about, of success rate, and a person who says, you know what, I don't want to go through the nausea, I don't want to go through the radiation and the burning and the sickness, I just want to live the rest of my life as best I can and enjoy it until the end. Do you know the ratio of how long these people live, whether they choose the medical establishment way or the alternative way or just going natural?
Yeah, that's going to depend on the type of cancer, what stage you're in. So there's so many variables there. I've never heard of anybody couch it that way. But I remember my husband looked at me and said, "Megan, I don't have to do anything. We could just select to not do anything." And he had a slow growing cancer. And before we poked the biopsy, of course, once you poke the biopsy needle, that sometimes that makes the cancer spread in itself. People should know that. He said, "Maybe we should just not do any of this." And I said, "It's definitely an option." But in the end, he followed the white coat. So
Also in the documentary, they talk about the emotional side of cancer. How is that treated in the medical establishment today?
the only thing they really care about is that they don't take away your hope. Otherwise, they don't understand. I think they understand stress, but they don't talk to their patients about it. And stress is one of the things that can bring on cancer in itself, because if you stay in a fight or flight mode, and your adrenals are pumping, pumping, and your cortisol levels remain at a high level, eventually all of your other hormones are going to do this cascading dive, and your systems are going to start crashing. And that's when your immune system goes downhill, and that's when you can contract things like cancer. So emotional is very important, and it's one of the things that the non-conventional doctors work on with the patient is, what were you doing 2 to 10 years ago? What happened? Did somebody in your family pass away? And they like to get into that, because if they don't, one doctor said, if you don't solve that riddle, then sometimes the cancer won't go away. Which I thought was fascinating.
So people who are they check out both schools of thought, going either through the medical establishment or through alternative therapies. Do they have to go to like lots of different alternative therapies, like maybe a psychiatrist or psychologist for the emotional part? And I understand there's also a dental part. You'll talk about that in a second. There's also the physical part, and maybe one treats with herbs, and another one treats with massage, and another one treats with whatever their therapies are. What is a person looking at?
So what I found in these clinics is they all kind of had certain things that they all did, almost all of them across the board, like high dose vitamin C IV. That one was used in most every clinic. And the other thing is their philosophies. They know that, and of course, conventional doesn't talk about this. Cancer loves sugar, and cancer hates oxygen. And those two things are really important to remember. Those are like two of the big fighting tools. All of the philosophies, all of the treatments that non-conventional use are looking at metabolic cycles. So Cancer cells like a different anaerobic cycle versus the aerobic of a normal cell, and they're set up as a sugar eating machine. So yes, they talk. So a lot of them look at, pretty much all of them look at the dentistry. Do, you know, what are your dentals? What's going on? Do you have a root canal that's flaring up, or some kind of trap, some kind of bacterium in there that's feeding down into your lymph glands, that's going into your breast and is out, you know. A lot of times they'll just pull a tooth. There was a doctor over in Switzerland who said 95% of his breast cancer patients had a bad tooth affiliated with that cancer. And once they fixed the tooth, the cancer started to melt away. I thought that was fascinating.
Really?
Yeah. Biological dentistry is very important, and I need to get on that more. I'm going through a conventional guy who uses kind of some, he understands it, but I don't think he really embraces it. So I probably need to change dentist myself. But yeah, who knew about teeth, right? It's very important.
For the dental part, that could be a possible cause for a person having cancer. You're saying one is because when a tooth is pulled, there's maybe a pocket of gum there that's open to infection, and that is stressing the immune system, I guess, and weakening the body, and that could be one way where cancer could get up on a leg and grow. What about
Right.
the mercury that they put in our teeth for cavities?
Yeah, that's been proven to wreak havoc on your body. It's very highly toxic. They're not in the US, they're not making dentists use mercury anymore. But they do use it on the military, I found out through my dentist. They mandate they have to get, if they want it covered by the government, they have to get mercury fillings. And that, I'm not sure what that's about. I was thinking about doing another film on that. So yeah, just but the root canal, everybody I talk to, it seems to be this root canal. They go in, they do their thing. You don't really want to know if you don't know what they do, because it's kind of gross. I was a dental assistant for two months, and then they close it up. And if they close it up before the bacterium is killed, then you've now put a cap over a bacterium that's just sitting there and brewing, and that'll affect, like you said, it'll tax your immune system. It's also connected to the Chinese meridians, like the breast teeth are up in this area of your mouth.
Interesting.
Yeah, I haven't looked in it. I need to look into it. There's actually documentaries on them on this subject that I'd like to watch. I haven't done that yet because I'm so busy with this one, but.
That's fascinating. Just to do a summary here, you're saying that these doctors in the documentary are saying that the cancer feeds on sugar, and the medical establishment today is not telling people to change their diet for cancer. Is that correct so far?
Yeah, they get very minimum. Conventional gets like 2 months of nutrition, and they're mostly talking about vitamins. They're not talking about how to eat non-GMO, all that stuff. They don't learn that stuff, so they don't know about it.
Why does the GMO stuff affect cancer?
So your body doesn't recognize something that's been genetically modified the same way as if something that's natural. So it's going to metabolize it different. It's going to have more toxins. It's going to break down different. And it's just not, every doctor I've talked to says, no, eat organic food whenever you can. And I actually had a breast that was inflamed. I found caught within a thermogram, and I changed my lifestyle, lost weight. I got off of three medications. I got onto supplements, and lo and behold, the inflammation within a year went away, and the breast went back to normal. So
Wow.
thermograms are fantastic tools for breast cancer. They're like a finding the tumor before it forms, but once it forms, it's really hard to break down. So you want to catch the inflammation early.
Okay, and you and was also mentioned in the documentary that, and you just said it also, that it hates the cancer cells hate sugar. Sorry, they love sugar, but they hate oxygen. And so, if that's true, then maybe therapy like ozone therapy would be very good for cancer patients.
Yeah, anything that puts oxygen into your body, vitamin C does that also, hydrogen peroxide, ozone, all those therapies are used along with other things. And it forces the cancer cells like anaerobic, so no oxygen cycle. It prefers that. It's set up for to just take in sugar and spit out the energy that it needs through the anaerobic cycle. So if you flood the body with oxygen and you starve it of sugar, the cancer cell is going to die. So there's stuff that you can do on your own to empower yourself over this cancer. And that is to remember those two things and do everything in your lifestyle to cut out sugar and increase your oxygen, exercise, all that stuff that we're supposed to do.
That we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
All right. So you made this documentary. You had a husband. He died from cancer. What motivated you to make this film? Many people have someone, God forbid, in their family that succumbed to cancer. They don't go out and make documentaries.
So, I contracted late Lyme disease back in 2007, and I used what's called a Rife machine, R-I-F-E, to cure myself because I was told I was incurable by Johns Hopkins.
What is a Rife machine?
Okay, it's electric medicine, and it's complicated, but it was invented, you can Google it, it was invented back in the 1930s, and I actually, it's by Dr. Raymond Royal Rife, who is a brilliant researcher and medical doctor, and my film will talk about the Rife machine. But so I cured myself of late Lyme, and I also saw that my friend who had squamous cell on his leg, he used the Rife machine, and his squamous cell went away. So I went, okay, so... You know, their claims that it can cure cancer were also true.
Where do you get these machines?
Excuse me. Well, there's a company up in Canada. And if I don't think I want to say the actual name because I don't want people, you know, it's kind of a sensitive subject. Okay. Big Pharma doesn't like that these films are, or these machines are even out there. Probably over in Europe, and the companies will generally send anywhere in the world. And I think they said they sent to Israel one time, at least once. So, but you have to make sure you get a good one, which generally means it's going to cost, you know, the one I bought costs like $6,000. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But I mean, it cures everything. I've cured, you know, I got a really bad bout of COVID, and I had pneumonia. And my doctor wouldn't give me antibiotics. She said, if you have pneumonia, it's viral. And I went, that's not true. So I ran the bacterial staph strep and my pneumonia went away. I mean, I was probably headed for the hospital if I hadn't cleaned that up myself. So these machines are fantastic. What was your question? Because I've gotten off.
So I was asking you why you made this documentary.
Right. So based on that, 2 years later, my husband contracted cancer. And I said, Proctor, why don't you try this machine on your cancer before you're stage four, you know, before you do radiation and chemo. So he ran the machine, and 3 days later, his lungs, he was wheezing at that point, his lungs cleared up. And I said, you know, that tells me this machine is working. And he said, Megan, I don't understand this machine. I tried to explain it to him. And he said, I don't understand it. I have to do what my doctor says. I just have to. And so I knew it was his journey. I felt like I pushed him as far as I could. So after 6 years of thinking about that, and also his oncologist admitted there's a thing called kickback for chemotherapy, where they allow doctors to buy the wholesale prices, put on a margin of profit, and then sell at retail. So doctors in the 80s, 90s were making a gazillion dollars off that scheme. So finally, Medicare said, no, we're going to cap it at 6% profit. Well, so then the doctors were in a panic because they wanted to figure out how to make up that margin that they just lost all that income. Well, the doctor that Proctor was going to closed the door and said, look, somebody confronted him in the room and he said, look, this is what's going on. Sometimes I have to give a patient three chemos instead of two or I will go out of business.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So I looked at Proctor and I said, is this the guy you want to go to? And he said he was recommended by my family doctor. And so, you know, we were both so stunned that he had cancer. You can't think straight. And it wouldn't have been what I did. I would have gone running out of there. But anyway, so after stewing about that for 6 years after his death, I said, you know what? I've got all the tools. I'm an investigative journalist. I have a master's in science. I lobbied Congress. Everything is just kind of coming together. I feel like I need to do something. So I grabbed a cameraman who just, I happenstance, you know, synchronicity, wanted to learn how to videograph. And so videotape. And I said, come on the road. 2 weeks later, we're going to Europe and went all over Europe, Mexico, the US. And I just felt like it was my calling. You know, sometimes things in life just grab you. That one grabbed me. And I just flying blind, I just jumped into this thing with both feet and got about 200 hours of film. That's why my film is very thorough. It's 4 hours and 45 minutes long. It's a one-stop shop for, you'll learn what we're doing today. You'll learn about the therapies that they're using in these alternative cancer clinics. A lot of doctors are talking throughout it and some patient stories, which are really cool and convincing. And then the last one is why we're not using them. And I go into big medicine. So it's pretty thorough.
And so just to make clear to our listeners, the video, the film is on YouTube and it's free to watch for everyone?
It's free right now. I just wanted to get it out there, but you have to go to anewstandardofcare.com. I'm going to always keep it up on my website because if they take it off of a platform, which is probably going to happen eventually, I'll put it on a different platform. Yeah. So you can always find it on my website, anewstandardofcare.com. So yeah, right now it's free. And I did totally pay for both of my films out of pocket. But right now I'm just, you know, I just want to get it out there and then I'll worry about getting reimbursed later, if at all.
You talk about also DNA versus mitochondria. And a lot of people don't even know what mitochondria is. So maybe you can explain this type of treatment for cancer.
I'll try. So conventional largely looks at the chemotherapies are attacking the DNA of the cell. What non-conventional does is looks at the mitochondria, because the mitochondria in the cell is actually, they call it the powerhouse of the cell. It's where all the metabolic cycles occur, anaerobic, anaerobic that I talked about. Everything happens in the mitochondria. If your mitochondria are dysfunctioning, you've got problems, because that's where we get all our energy to survive. So the non-conventional looks at the mitochondria and they fix these metabolic pathways. That's why they look at sugar and oxygen, because that's what goes on in these metabolic cycles. They need those two things to create energy for our body. So that's the big difference. And conventional is now starting to look at immunotherapy. So they're getting closer, but they're never going to. It was explained to me that when they do immunotherapy, they're only looking at one part of the immune system, and the immune system's like all these different pieces that have to work together in harmony, and they're only tweaking one part of it. So it's going to mutate around that and you're going to get your cancer back. So they can't get the solid tumors. The blood cancers, they're getting pretty good, but not melanomas. Yes. But solid tumors, they're not doing a real good job at all.
So what are the important things that cancer patients can do on their own, regardless of whatever treatment they're choosing to take?
So again, if you look at cancer loves sugar and hates oxygen, look at how much, you know, stop eating those cookies and cakes and things that we love. Generally, that means losing weight. They say if you're obese, you have a 20% higher chance of contracting cancer. That might be just because of what you're eating to be obese in the first place. So get your diet, you know, fix that, eat, you know, non-GMO, organic food, lots of greens, you know, all the stuff we've been told to do, right? Get out there and exercise, because that's increasing the oxygen in your body. Take care of yourself. Try and get I know we're all under stress right now. The world's gone crazy, but try and get as much stress out of your body as you can. Meditate. There's all kinds of stuff. And if you can afford like acupuncture, all that stuff is great for you. So.
Now you also talked with the National Cancer Institute, and what did they say about alternative therapies?
So they put a program together, I'm not sure how, probably like 15, maybe 20 years ago, and they called it the Best Case Series. And they were looking all around the world for the best alternative cancer therapies. Okay, sounds good, right? So they came out with three ones that they thought had the greatest potential, that looked like it had both efficacy, which means effectiveness, and low toxicity. The three that they came out with, three that they came up with, was homeopathy, macrobiotic diet, and a thing called insulin potentiation therapy, or IPT. I go through that in homeopathy in my film. And none of those, they started to look down all of those avenues, and none of them went past just looking at them. And they always had an excuse for the homeopathy. They were going to go over, there was a son and a father curing cancers with homeopathy over in India. So they were trying to run a trial over in India. Well, the Indian government did something that, I don't know, they demanded something that wasn't doable. So the U.S., instead of bringing the homeopathy tools over to the U.S. and just running the trial in the U.S., they just said, well, we can't do the trial. They just threw their hands up. And I was like, that's not an excuse, you know? And then the IPT, the same thing, insulin potentiation therapy, is a way for the, it uses insulin. It's complicated. I'll just tell you, in the end, you only have to use about 5 to 40% of the original dose of chemotherapy. So, and it's also like it directs the chemotherapy to the cancer cell, so you don't kill all the other cells, and it's less toxic. Patients aren't losing their hairs. They're not having side effects, vomiting, all that stuff, because it's not as toxic. Again, all of a sudden, NCI decided, well, that's not really, you know, it's not really alternatives, because it's chemotherapy. So it's not in the right department to study it. And I was like, then put it into a different, just transfer it to a different, you know, department and study it. But they never did that. And it's just very suspicious. That they had three things they found were working, and they just dropped the ball.
So what's keeping these therapies from being used today?
Every time the government, the U.S. government, goes after a therapy, that tells me that it works. That's in my eyes. I'm just oversimplification probably, but when they try and take NAC off the market, a supplement, that tells me it's working for somebody somewhere.
That's
doing
so
some
funny. I have it right here.
You go. I've got mine right behind me.
Because yeah, if I don't keep it at my desk, I forget to take. good stuff. Okay. So I want to ask you this question. You may not feel comfortable answering it, but I want to ask it for our listeners, because if I'm coming from a place of I'm very naive, I trust my doctor, I trust the government, I don't think that I have to double check them, because after all, they're experts and they care about me and they care about my welfare. And when I hear these things, it kind of sounds like, oh boy, silver aluminum foil hats and conspiracies. And why would my doctor or the medical establishment want to kill me? Wouldn't it be better to have healthy patients and people than having a sick population? And why would the government want to go along with this and hide all of these results? The positive results of people who went an alternative way and it turned out better than the standard procedure way in the medical establishment. Why? Answer the question, why?
Right. Well, you know, I was not, I wasn't sure where all my research was going to end up. And so if you watch my film, I think everybody, all my friends that are conventional minded, and they think I'm crazy because of, you know, we talked about the vaccine and all that stuff, and they think I'm nuts. And then they watch my film and they're like, oh my gosh, you've convinced me. I had a lawyer say I convinced him to look at alternatives if he got sick. And that's big. What that I was actually, I didn't know if I was going to be able to convince people to even consider it. And I have people saying, Megan, you've made me a believer. So
what made them a believer? What did you explain to them?
All the evidence, 4 hours and 45 minutes of what's going on. I put all the medical literature in there. Every time somebody said that, you know, American Cancer Society says, blah, blah, this is a myth, I'd go into literature and say, well, guess what? What you're saying is a myth. I mean, I just turned everything on its head. And one of the most, I think my aha moment for, I think they do want to keep us sick, because that's what these doctors were saying. And I kept going, yeah, that can't be right, you know? Well, at the American Society of Clinical Oncologists, they're the ones who, there's the association, trade association for all oncologists in the US. They came out with a paper that tried to basically overturn all the studies that said that sugar feeds cancer at a higher rate. It was all done by different universities around the US. They used statistics to go in and say, this is baloney. It's not true. Don't buy it. Keep getting your, you know, get, make sure your cancer patients are eating as much as they can. Doesn't matter what they're eating because they're going to die otherwise. You go down to the bottom of the paper and it was funded by Coca-Cola. That was my aha moment where I said, wow. And who did Coca-Cola go to the Oncology Association and say, can we do this study? Or was it vice versa? I'd like to know that.
I just want to tell you my personal experience of trying to shake people and wake them up and to take responsibility for their lives instead of just handing it over to their doctor or the government. The vast majority, if not almost everyone, don't want to believe it. They won't even listen. Like you said, you presented all this data to them. I found that people will only accept the data if they're open to it. And to be open to it, it means that you have to have the possibility in your mind that maybe it's true. Maybe this other side that the medical establishment doesn't care for about me, that my government doesn't care about me. Maybe it's true. Let's examine it. Show me the data. Show me what's happening. And then I can make an informed decision. But most people that I've spoken to, they are in the way of, I can't believe that, because then the world would be too ugly and I don't want to live in an ugly world. And so I'm just going to stay in my comfort zone. And you're the one with the tinfoil hat on. And I mean, that's been my experience.
I totally understand that. And it's hard to go against the grain. And we all had to do it during the pandemic, right? Those of us on this side. But again, just tell them, two of the top five medical journalists editors have come out and said 50% of the medical literature is fraudulent, roughly. And you can't even trust your own doctor because of it. That's,
can you send that, me the source for that so we can tag it on to this interview for others to have and see? I would like to see that as well.
Yeah, so their whole evidence-based medicine just falls apart when you know that.
So I'm going to say this also. I know maybe I sound very naive right now, but when I see the data, because my father, he's a Holocaust survivor. And so he told me that when there were some that were saying, listen, the Nazis are going to come in. They're going to do all this. They're going to kill us. The Jewish people, most Jews didn't want to believe it because the Nazis, if we have to understand, Germany was the most cultured society in Europe before World War II. That's where all the hip people would be sitting in the cafes in Berlin, smoking their cigarettes, the poets and the philosophers and the hippest people. And who can imagine a society that's so cultured is going to go putting people, you know, in gas chambers and committing genocide, etc. And so most people didn't believe it, again, because they didn't want to believe such a thing could happen. And why am I telling you this?
Well, you know what? It's cognitive dissonance. It's cognitive dissonance. It's when you don't want to believe something because you want to stay in your own little safe bubble. Yes. And I totally understand that because I had one foot in the bubble and one foot out when I started this journey. But then when these doctors, they all were saying the same thing. And then I saw it with my own eyes in the literature, all this stuff that they were saying, the associations were saying. I used to run an association. I went up against some real slimy associations. So I knew that this was, could have been what was going on. And sure enough, all their myths are right there on their website. And you can just turn them over, just going into the literature. It tells you a lot because that's what doctors listen to, their associations. And they are a big part of the problem.
I wanted to say with all the research that I've done, all the interviews I've done and learned about the data and learned about what's happening, I understand it here and I can accept it that we cannot trust these people, no matter how much we want to, because we ourselves are good people. And that's why we can't imagine that somebody else would do something like this, because we know that we couldn't do something like this. But saying that, even in my heart, it's still hard for me today. Still today, it's hard for me to accept that there could be people in the world so callous, so immoral, so focused on their wealth and keeping their jobs and their status. And even if it hurts other people, there, it kind of like, it's still, there's like a little bit of, it's stuck there. But I learned to go with my head, even though my heart's going to have to follow. And that's just self-discipline. But I want anybody else who's listening to this interview to understand that if you look at the data that hasn't been censored and that is available to find, you're going to see that it's compelling evidence to what we're talking about here. And I urge you as well to watch the film. Again, it's on YouTube right now, but you can go and watch it from the website, anewstandardofcare.com. And there, just to for our listeners as well, in this documentary, you have people who are testifying themselves that they've had cancer and they were able to cure themselves from the cancer. And even their doctors were surprised and or incredulous, and then try to hide the fact that they ever had cancer in the first place, because this would go against everything that they represent. We want to say a little bit last word about that.
Yeah, that to me was terrible. So the patients would have stage four cancer. They turn down standard of care by conventional. They go to Mexico. They get all fixed, you know, pancreatics. You know, they had all the scans that told them they had cancer all over their body. Sometimes they'd have surgery, at least surgery, but no chemo radiation. So it was confirmed that they had cancer. They go back to their doctors at wherever. And the doctors would go, "Something's wrong with the machine. You're not showing any cancer anywhere." She's like, "I went to Mexico." You know, she's like, "Well, tell me what you did." And then they take it to the tumor boards at the hospital, but then nothing ever came out of it. So they're trying to like figure out what's conventional or what non-conventional is doing that's making it work. And then they're trying to like figure out if they can patent it and make money off of it, you know, but they're never like letting the public know, "Oh my gosh, these clinics are actually working down there." You know, it's crazy.
I want to mention to our listeners that I believe that the woman that you're talking about in this specific case, she's an Israeli woman. She's from
Correct.
Israel originally.
Okay.
And so that was interesting to see. Her name was Tova, if I'm not mistaken. So
Maybe.
Anybody who wants to see these testimonials from people who did search other options and it worked for them. And again, you have to make your own decision. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not a doctor. and I'm not telling you what to do. But I do think that people should take responsibility for their health and not just throw it in their doctor's lap, because their doctor is in a framework where they are being told what treatments they're allowed to give and what they can't. They're not free to doctor the way that they feel that they should. And so many of these doctors themselves are trapped, and we have to understand that, and we need to research and then make our own informed decisions. Do you want to say a last word, Megan?
Yeah, this film, I wanted people to have hope. When they get a cancer diagnosis, I really wanted them to have hope and not be afraid of the therapies. That's what they are in conventional. They're afraid of the therapies. They're pretending to have hope, but they're really afraid of the therapies. They don't want to lose their hair, et cetera. I want people to have hope. And that's the one thing that alternatives gives people. It's also a spiritual adventure. Everyone that's told me that's cured, turned their cancers around, they said it's been a very spiritual happening. So anyway, I just want you to have hope, watch the film, know what you're going to do before you get cancer. Cause one out of, you know, about 50% of us now are getting cancer in our lifetime. So
wow,
it's important to know ahead of time.
You know, I just thought of another question just now, and I don't know if you know the answer, but for people who, God forbid, get cancer and they go the medical establishment way of doing chemo and or radiation, I imagine that most of that is paid for by insurance, by their medical insurance. If they decide they want to go and get alternative treatments or go to a clinic The one that you interviewed that was in Mexico, where they did all sorts of different therapies in the same place. They did the vitamin C, they did the ozone, they did coffee enemas, I believe, to clean out the organs. They used all these different things, even sent people to get dental work if necessary. What are people looking at in the way of cost? I mean, I imagine that their medical insurance is not going to pay for that. What is the ballpark figure that they might be looking at?
Right. So the Mexican clinics, I think, start around 25,000 a visit. And no, insurance will not pay for it, unfortunately. But I know a gentleman who had stage 3C cancer, and he turned it, Chris Wark, he turned his cancer around just by changing his diet. So he was glued to a blender. So you can do it less expensive if you don't have money, but then there's other clinics that cost, $50,000 to $100,000. So unfortunately, it's a situation where if you have money, you have more opportunities than if you don't. But you can take care of yourself better and reverse it. You can do it. It's not easy. There's a lot of books out there that talk about it, though.
And people are doing it. And that's why people like you are making these documentaries to let other people know. And again, I want to remind everybody, if you want to see this video, it's free right now. And just go to the website, anewstandardofcare.com. We will put that link on the page where this interview is shown. And I want to thank you, Megan Smith. As we say in Hebrew, but I'll say it in English. May you go from strength to strength and help people and keep doing good. Thank you so much for coming on and speaking about this.
Thank you, and thank you for your show. Appreciate it.